This is Dr. Maria Sampalas, and welcome to Corporate Optometry Nation podcast, where we interview eye care professionals in corporate optometry and take a different approach to a business aspects of optometry. Hey, Corporate Optometry Nation, this is Dr. Maria Sampalas. Today, I have the pleasure of talking to Dr. Graham Keith. You know him from the Corporate Optometry Facebook group. He's an important member of the group with lots of discussions, lots of comments, and has helped the group grow. So that's been a great advantage to my group as well. Thank you, Dr. Keith, for coming on board today on the Corporate Optometry Nation podcast.
Oh, thanks so much. I'm happy to be here. I appreciate your time and everything that you do to promote our profession as well, Dr. Sampalas.
Oh, thank you so much. I want to give him a great introduction here. He graduated from Indiana University School of Optometry in 2013 with honors, was voted Associate Instructor of the Year while in optometry school, and as well has many years of experience in teaching and is an associate instructor. And he currently works in Minneapolis with Walmart, and for a Walmart doctor that was chosen Doctor of the Year in the country, Dr. Scott Haddon. And he sees patients in those five different clinics. Dr. Keith, can you tell us how you started working for Walmart and why it's been a good choice for you and your profession and your career and for your family?
Oh, certainly. My wife and I met at Indiana University, and upon graduation, she moved up to Minneapolis to work for General Mills. So after I graduated, I moved on up to follow and be with her. And I went through a couple of interviews, a couple of private practices that I interviewed with. They were looking for an employee, but they just weren't offering what I needed to pay down my student loans. I just happened to meet up with Dr. Haddon, who is a Walmart doctor that has 8-9 locations, and he needed a couple of optometrists on board to help him manage the empire. And it was just a good fit. He's a great doctor to work for. Through optometry school, I had went to the dinner meetings with Walmart, with Target, and all those places. And just like all the other students, we kind of tell ourselves, yeah, we're going to get a free meal here, but I don't think I'd ever see myself working in corporate. But after seeing how Dr. Haddon runs his practice, it's more of a private practice within Walmart. I know that's what we say a lot of times, but I mean, he was managing medical, he was seeing all sorts of different patients. It really was his practice within Walmart's roof. So whenever he hired me aboard, he didn't just slap me with a book full of rules. He said, I want you to treat this like your own practice and make these decisions. I'll be here to guide you. But that really helped me just jump right in, kind of like a cold start without the worry of not getting paid for 2 years. It was just a great fit at the right time. And I was really happy that it's been working this well so far.
Yeah, it's great that you're able to practice the way you want in a corporate setting. And that doctor has kind of built the medical model in his practices, and because that's the future of optometry. Can you tell us what kind of equipment he has?
Well, in every location, we've got a digital retinal camera. We recently picked up a Daytona Optos wide field for one of our locations. About 2 or 3 years ago, we picked up an OCT machine. We've got BlepharX. We've got anterior seg photography. Pretty much anything's at my disposal. Whenever patients walk in, I try to tell them not every Walmart looks like this with this amount of equipment, but the surgery centers and the Mayo Clinic has the same type of technology. So I'm really surrounded by a lot of the toys that help us do our job better.
Well, that's right. But it's also the doctors too that are able to take that data, provide good patient care, be able to build a practice from it as well. And he's built a great practice over the years, but his practice is only as good as his employees, and having great doctors like yourself on staff to be up to date with the latest CE and having that background as associate instructor in optometry school really helps, gives you that extra edge compared to other optometrists in your area.
That's what I end up hearing from a lot of patients. A lot of the patients that walk out of the eye exam tell me that they've never learned so much before. And I think that goes back to my background in teaching and trying to help other people understand stuff. Patients want to know about the health of their eyes. They want to know what it is that we're looking for. If we don't inform them of what can go wrong with their eyes, they won't see any value in our exam. And that's where Optirnative and all these other disruptors are trying to get their foot in the door. It's because we're not doing our job by educating patients on what it is that we're looking for.
Yeah. And that's why I wanted to bring you on board to the podcast today. I wanted to get your experience and expertise on building patient trust through education, because I think that's very important for the future of optometry to kind of inhibit some of these disruptors in the industry, to be able to educate patients in their doctors in their community, to educate patients, because doctors don't realize that they're the leaders and the experts in the industry. In each individual city, they can make a difference. And, you know, I recently had a patient that came in for pink eye, and after just examining, realized that the patient had nystagmus. And for me, you know, referred the patient out, found out she had a brain tumor. And for me, it's been very humbling, very exciting for me as a practitioner to have saved a life and made a difference in those people's lives. And I think Optrnative and other disruptors would not have caught that. So I think educating, getting the message out there, doctors being associated with Think About Your Eyes and even the AOA is very important. Can you give us some insights on what doctors can do to build trust for patients?
Well, it starts out with just listening to them. We keep hearing stats and data that patient can't even get through a minute worth of their chief complaint or reason for coming in before a doctor interrupts them. That's what I like to do first, is just once I ask them why they're here, let them talk. You can figure out most problems just by what the patient has to tell you, but only if you're listening. So that's the biggest thing to start out with. And then once the patient knows that you're receptive to them, you've put the computer away, you're attentive and listening to the patient, they've got your attention, then they're going to be a lot more open to hearing the education that you're sharing with them, or, you know, treatment plans or anything like that. Compliance is going to increase once they know that you're there for the patient. And that's where it all starts.
Yeah, listening to their complaint, I think, builds trust. It's learning to listen, because like you said, there's a lot of crowded communication in the exam room. A lot of doctors don't have a lot of time. How much time do you allocate to seeing a patient at your practice?
Whether it's a new patient or a previous patient, we give 20 minutes for a full eye exam. I think the kicker is that we're not booked 3 weeks out like a lot of other places. So even though our exam slots are for 20 minutes, sometimes I might get to spend that extra 15 or 20 minutes with a patient because we don't have somebody in the next time slot.
Well, that's good that you take that extra time, even though if you have it, right? Listening, I think even silences show that you care and humanitize the patient experience.
Certainly. And that doesn't mean you have to book every appointment at 20, 30, 40 minutes. You can be efficient with your time. I know a lot of doctors will say that they'll talk through their exam. As they're doing a slit lamp exam behind the microscope, they'll say everything that they're looking for. I do think that's helpful rather than just going through the motions in silence. That way the patient knows that you're checking so many different parts of their eye. It's not just a quick flash through the eyes.
Well, I think that also differentiates your practice, right? As you go, you know, you're explaining things. A lot of patients will come in, and if they think that an eye exam is just a refraction, then you're going to be a commodity in the industry. And maybe they will go online to get an eye exam in the future. But maybe, you know, talking through each step of why it's important is a way to kind of build a trust as well. And it also shows that you're an expert in your field to that patient. Patients want to have a doctor that knows their expertise. And I think that's also a great way to do that, especially with young ODs coming out of school. They might have that confidence, and being able to portray that confidence to the patient will only create loyalty and build a business.
So that brings up an interesting point. In a patient's mind, we don't have to be the research scholars. We don't have to be publishing journals and doing all this stuff to be knowledgeable in our field. I mean, we all went to school for all this time studying the eyes, and that's our expertise right there. So I feel confident discussing eye anatomy and health recommendations with patients because of the training that I've had. But my training's no different than everyone else's. You just have to be comfortable in what you know. And the patient will really be appreciative of that information that you're sharing with. It's just most doctors don't take the time to share that information with. So that's how you can quickly earn the trust of that patient, is by sharing the knowledge that you've worked so hard for.
Right. And I think communicating effectively is the foundation that establishes trust with the patients. Can you give us like an idea of what that sounds like? Do you have a script that you use? I know doctors say, you know, it's just your routine myope, here's your script, go get glasses. I think that just taking the time and just having an effective script is important as well, even if it's your routine myope.
Yeah, and with a routine myope, for example, because we do fundus photography on pretty much every patient, I'll be able to pull up their pictures of the back of their eyes in the exam room. And I also have a sample picture of the things that we're looking for. whether it's a tumor in the back of the eye or damage from diabetes or retinal tears, I pull up their picture and I say, okay, here's what the back of your eye looks like. This is where your brain plugs in. Here's where your center vision's at and your blood vessels. We're the only docs with a live view of your blood vessels without cutting you open. So it's not just a glasses prescription we're looking for. It's diabetes, high blood pressure, cholesterol, damage from those things. We're even looking for brain tumors like in the patient that you found. The hardest thing about having a script is whenever you have a mom that brings in three kids and you have three exams in a row and you can't just repeat the same thing three times over. So, I mean, there's so much information we can share. A script is great. I mean, it's an easy go-to, but in those examples where you have to do three explanations in a row, there's always tons of information to share. Usually a patient would say, well, my dad has macular degeneration. Well, then I'll get my iPad out, pull up a picture, and I'll say, here's what macular degeneration looks like in the back of your eye. This is why you don't want to start smoking. I mean, any question the patient has is an opportunity to help them understand just how much you care about the health of their eyes.
I think so. Yeah. Expressing empathy is very important to building that trust. And a lot of patients will respect you for that. I've talked about before, like emotional branding. And I think that's one of the ways as well to kind of connect with a patient. I want to go back to those slides that you have for the retinal photography of what could go wrong with the eye. Where do you get those? Do you have those from other patients? Do you have them from industry?
Yeah, we've got one at our clinic that has the Optos, we've gotten the just the standard photo from them. It combines 12, 15 different ocular health concerns into one simple photo. I've gotten pictures online from different educational institutions. I've taken pictures of patients that I've had in the chair, asked them for permission to share their photos. Of course, I scrub clean all of the PHI. So it's just really a collection of all different places that I've gotten this information.
It's a very good practice management point for a lot of doctors that they could kind of compare, even doing the routine exams. In my waiting room, I have a Topcon photo and it just shows what macular degeneration can look like in the back of the eye. I think a lot of doctors have it and what the vision portrays with that. Do you have things like that in your waiting room as kind of like a open communication builder?
It's nice to have them in the waiting room. That gives the perception that you're running a medical clinic and not just a refraction mill. But I find it more helpful, more interactive to have all these photos saved to an iPad, something that I can actually hand over to the patient, something that they can zoom in and out of. Once it's in their hands and they're really paying attention to it, I think that's where you get the most benefit from.
It's like personalized care for that patient. Do you use the recommendations, like you said, from macular degeneration, that my father has macular degeneration, you said not to start smoking. Do you also recommend certain lenses or eyewear for patients like that? Because I think doctor-driven dispensing is important. What is your perception on it?
That's something I'm trying to learn more about every day. We just had a lens manufacturing company come in and do training for the opticians. And since I didn't have patients at the time, I sat in for the training. So I'm learning more about blue light blocking technology, just all sorts of things. There's so much information out there that we could quit practicing with patients and just spend all day learning. But you know, it's more of a balance between trying to get those quick clinical pearls and practice management tips and then rushing back to see patients. But I think it is a good idea.
Yeah, I applaud you for sitting in at that meeting with the opticians because a lot of doctors would just stay in their office. They're like, I have an extra 15 minutes to myself. And I applaud you because that really helps your patients. It helps the practice. And it's good for the practice as a whole if the doctor's involved with the optical itself. But the optical has to be involved with the doctor as well. The alignment has to be there. So I think that's very important.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. That's a big challenge with corporate. It seems like they're always afraid of kickbacks here and there. And they don't understand that you don't have to drag people in to give your business a good name. Just as long as you're sharing the type of experience that other patients have, you can be promoting your practicing doctor without necessarily violating any type of kickback rules, which I find are a pain.
Do you educate the optical staff on certain eye issues, flashes, floaters, things like that, that if someone with an outside script came in and was talking to the optical staff, that they would be aware of it to let them know that, look, we have a doctor here. This doctor has the latest technology up to date. Maybe it's an issue you need to be checked right now.
I think that's the biggest thing that we can do to drive our business and to help patients is to help our staff understand these medical emergencies. Almost every time I have one of these fun patients come in that challenge me and require out-of-the-box thinking, I'll try to that same day bring in one or two staff members and do a quick case review with them. Show them, here's what the patient came in complaining of. Here's what we found during the exam. I'll tell the optician, here's how you helped me by getting that great digital photo after dilation or by helping the patient get scheduled so quickly. As long as the staff member knows that they were a part of this, they're going to be so much more involved in the future. And like you mentioned, as long as they can triage these medical emergencies, they're going to have a lot more respect for the work that they do because it is important work. They're not just out there selling glasses and contacts. They're every bit a part of this eye care profession that we are, and we need to recognize that.
That's right. I think they are a big part of the patient experience. We are independent in a lot of states, but we do need to collaborate together and work together. So educating the optical staff that an eye exam is more than selling glasses, I think, is important because it also builds the business, creates retention. A lot of them are employed and sometimes it's just a job, but I think if the longevity of their job and be able to move up in a company or whatever else their career desires are, is to build the OD business as well and to be able to keep the OD there. If the OD is happy, you know, doing routine exams and that's what they want to do, that's fine. But if the doctor wants to practice medical model and build a business, I think the optical staff needs to be on board as well. Especially with optometry evolving and the landscape changing, people need to be able to adapt because if they don't, it's going to be big changes for their careers as well. So I want to talk to you about giving bad news to a patient. How do you approach that? We get a lot of patients that losing sight is pretty dramatic and devastating to a lot of patients. Can you give the doctors in the group some insight on how to approach it and what it might sound like and, you know, body language and things like that?
Certainly. The example that comes to mind most recently was a patient that was a retinal detachment suspect. And she had been to a couple of satellite clinics that said, well, everything looks fine. And she showed up in my chair a couple of months later with more flashes and floaters in her vision. And after dilation drops, I was able to see that she had a pretty large detachment, but she still had vision in that eye. Thankfully, the macula was still on. And what I did was I just stepped outside of the room for a minute, collected my thoughts, went back in with a straight face. Again, I put all my electronics aside. I sat facing her, you know, the body language is very important. And I basically just told her what she needed to know fact for fact. I didn't sugarcoat anything. I didn't beat around the bush. You just got to come out and say what it is that the patient needs to hear, but then be absolutely ready to answer all the questions that are coming right after that. A hard thing to know is exactly how far to go to empathize with the patient. You know, some patients, you just have to hug them. You've got to put an arm on their shoulder, their hand. You've got to hold their hand. I think each one of us can determine when that situation's appropriate and when it's not. So it really is on a case-by-case basis. But the overall theme is collect your thoughts, give the patient your full attention, and just let them know that you're there for them. You're their advocate. You're gonna do for them what's needed to get them to the next step. Because we're not gonna be the ones providing that emergency medical care, but we can surely make things efficient and comfortable for the patient on the path to getting them there. And that's I think what our job is.
Yeah, those are some good points. Thank you for sharing that, especially with those, you know, with one or two tough positions that we get put in, but that's our job. And that's why we go, that's why we went to optometry school was to save vision. So I think those are some good points. Would you, from that situation there, would you have your staff make that emergency phone call for the patient? Say, I'm going to personally call the retina specialist. I'm going to try to get you in today. I think that kind of makes people more comfortable to be seen right away.
Yeah, and that's the call that I'd be making myself. Again, since I'm not booked six exams an hour, booked out 3 weeks, that's where I would want to take the time myself to put the retinal specialist on speakerphone so that the patient could hear every concern that I have, and so that the patient could see that I'm working on their behalf to get them the care that they need.
So after you make that consult visit with the retina specialist, are you calling the patient back the next day, the week after? Are you calling the retina specialist? What is the follow-up on that to show the patients that, you know, you want good outcome from their surgery?
That's one of the rare cases where I'll give out my cell phone number. We've heard of other docs doing this, and usually we don't get calls. Hopefully it's not just a contact lens emergency at 4 a.m. But these patients will see that you care if you're going above and beyond the 9 to 5 work hour to make sure they're getting cared for. So I think it is nice to give them a call, you know, depending on when they're scheduled, either before the visit or maybe a week after, whenever everything's calmed down a little bit. If anything, it just gives me an update on how they're doing, which is nice to have. And then it also shows them that you care.
Yeah, caring is very important for a practice builder, but it also for good patient care as well. And you want to have good outcomes. You don't want to have patients that have lost vision under your watch. I've called patients back a couple hours after I referred them out just to make sure that they're doing well and if they have questions, because you have a great way of communicating with patients and having patients feel comfortable with you. And sometimes we refer to these busy clinics and they're not being answered to their questions, or they're not sympathetic to their emotions, and being able to follow back up will kind of help the patient as well. The doctor said this and I don't understand. I said, well, the best of my knowledge, this is what I can say, but maybe we can come back and get the retina specialist on the phone. I think that's important. Do you find that? Or when you refer, are you trying to find a doctor that is able to communicate positively and effectively so you don't have to make that extra step?
Where I practice in Minneapolis, we've got a ton of excellent surgeons and specialists. So for the most part, patients get treated very well. It'll be pretty rare for a patient to come back saying the scheduling was all screwed up or the doctor didn't take the time to listen to me or answer my questions. Those things do still happen. And what I'll try to do is let the surgeon's staff know that things didn't go well. I had a patient that we were trying to get scheduled for cataract surgery, and I was calling the surgeon's office from the exam room and with the patient in the chair. And we got halfway through scheduling and the scheduler hung up on me. And I looked at the patient and I said, I don't know what's going on here. And then I tried calling back and they didn't answer. So I said, well, let's just go with a different surgeon. And I contacted that surgeon about a week later. And I said, do you know what happened with this situation? I tried to schedule a patient and your receptionist hung up on us. And he said, well, yeah, I know what happened. She had kicked over the small portable heater that was plugged in under her desk, and that short circuited the whole outlet, and she couldn't figure out how to get everything plugged back in. And the surgeon told his staff member, you got to make something work there. You've got to call them back on your cell phone. You've got to do something to let them know what happened. So sometimes it's really weird stuff that happens at the surgeon's office. But if we let that office know that we didn't have the best of care for our patient, sometimes we can find out what happened. It's not always something fun and simple like kicking over a portable heater. Sometimes you've just got to make a change and go with a different clinic, but we've got to keep that line of communication open to let patients know that we're their advocates for that.
Sure. I want to talk about maybe newsletters or Facebook to, you know, promote optometry, healthcare for your practice, or just education to the patients, because a lot of patients don't know certain things, or sometimes they'll have a pink eye and they go see their regular physician and now they're taking erythromycin and they still have a pink eye after a week after. How do you educate via email or digitally to let your patients know you're the office to be seen for these issues, or just regular knowledge of what they should know about their eyes so they're not coming in after 2 weeks of flashes and floaters and the macula's off and there's nothing you can do?
Yeah, that's a real tough one. That's one that we've slowly been working on for the past 4 years since I've hired on. If we had an unlimited budget like some of these larger clinics, I think it'd be a lot easier to spread the word through social media, Facebook, websites, stuff like that. But whenever you're a smaller practice with a budget that isn't really there for social media. You've just got to start with the patient in the chair. You can educate them as to why they need to come see the optometrist instead of the primary care physician, and then tell them, okay, you're burdened with this information. Now it's your responsibility as the patient to share this information with your family, with your church members, with your coworkers. That's kind of the ground roots method that I'm using, having a limited marketing budget. I feel that if you really help the patient understand how important this is, they're going to tell their brother, their sister, their parents, their coworkers, maybe not their friends. That doesn't really come up at conversation, but you've got to start somewhere. And right now that's where we're starting.
Yeah, I think that's important that a lot of optometrists think they can't market their practice, but I think just marketing information out there in the area is very important, very powerful, because look at how Hubble has come out. It's not the best contact lens for the patient, and it's not the cheapest contact lens out there either. I think a lot of providers can provide a good quality lens at an affordable price, or even these opticals have great price points, but to give them better quality contact lenses, and how they advertise online eye exams, and it's dangerous for the population. So I think doctors, if they had a Facebook page, it's cost effective, and they can get the information out there.
And I would really love to see some of the big players in the industry do a better job marketing to these patients, informing these patients, whether it's commercials or their own Facebook blasts. I'm not going to name any of the companies, but these guys that are making so much money, if they could be more helpful in sharing this information with patients, I think that would be a win-win-win for everybody, especially the patients.
What do you think about your eyes campaign? Is your employer involved in that?
We're listed as providers for it. We haven't seen a lot of movement with it, so it's one of those things that are kind of on the back burner for us. I'd like to learn more about it, but I haven't really had any patients coming in talking about it, so we haven't really paid too much attention to it.
Yeah, I think it's new to optometry, kind of getting information out there. I think it should have been started 30, 40 years ago. I know that any patient that I talk to saying, do you get your teeth cleaned every 6 months? Everyone does. But optometry for an eye exam should be yearly, and patients don't know that. Some of them say it's when I need glasses or every 2 years. And a lot of it is, I think, our fault as optometrists. And I think a lot of it is industry as well. I think we need to change that just for patients' health as well.
Yeah, it's certainly a good start.
So we talked about a lot of great stuff today and how to build trust through communication and how to inhibit online realtors and how optometry is changing. And I want to thank Dr. Graham Keith for coming onto the podcast today. And I think Corporate Optometry Nation can really benefit from the pearls that you've given us today on patient trust and communication, because it really starts with us in the exam room and locally.
And I want to thank you for your time again, Dr. Sampalas. Again, if we're really listening to our patients, giving them our undivided attention, and then telling them why it's important that that person that can see perfect get in for an eye exam, I think not only will we grow our practice, but we'll be helping a lot more people that need help.
Thank you so much for your time.